Well, I'm Jeremy Rivera with Unscripted SEO. I'm here with Chris Rodriguez of IXL. I want you to tell us why we should trust you instead of an AI tool based off of your experience.
Oh, wow. Tough question. First of all, thanks for having me, Jeremy. Pleasure to be here in Nerd Out to SEO. I would say that the best solution is most likely to work with people like myself while also trusting but verifying with AI to understand what is perhaps recommendations from someone like myself due to seasoned experience versus what is 2025 cutting edge information, and most likely have to decide for yourself what is the newest, boldest tactic to use.
Love it. What is your experience? Because, you know, obviously an AI tool has experience being a language learning model. What have been some unique experiences in your life that have brought you to a level of expertise in SEO?
Well, first off, due to necessity, I started my career in tech and startups as a growth marketer. And so you have to at least be above average, at least average, but certainly ideal to be above average in multiple channels. So just by necessity, I had learned through brute force what it means to actually, quote unquote, do SEO services. So be it from the beginning of the keyword research to the optimizations of all the meta fields, title, description, H1, etc., URL slug, to refining that process for on-page optimizations. Again, all pre-AI manual based on best practices plus experience. And we've had a few success stories with that methodology. That process has evolved, as I'm sure you know, Jeremy, mm-hmm. to something where some of that stuff can be considered automatable, commoditized, etc. I think the right answer is somewhere in the middle, which is to say, plenty of times I feel informed by AI, and yet I feel that I need to teach AI or refine the response. Obvious, that's a language learning model. It's intended to learn. So I don't perceive any of these types of tools as a threat, more so as the new tool for experts like yourself and myself to master.
What type of industries did you come up in, and what type of industry and niche focus do you have at your agency?
Good delineation. So interesting, I guess, subplot of my personal story is that prior to getting into tech marketing, startup marketing, and technically growth marketing, I had spent up to 10 years in music and entertainment industry marketing. Okay. So I had a bit of a mid-career pivot. Mm-hmm. And I would say that during that time, the requirements were different, right? You're doing, with the utmost of respect to any musician or entertainment company that I'd worked with, the requirements are a bit less technical and less heavy for SEO. Mm-hmm. You don't have hundreds of pages that you need to optimize, et cetera. It's sort of like maybe less than 20 pages type deal. Whereas since then, specifically 2010, I had pivoted to tech and startup marketing. And in that vein, the industries have been quite vast, heavily in B2B SaaS, but not limited to that. We mm-hmm. have extensive experience in legal technology, sometimes called electronic discovery or e-discovery. We have experience in many of the different verticals like ed tech, family tech, sports tech, real estate tech. We've done substantial projects in many of these arenas. One anecdote that I often think about is having had an opportunity to make a first touch impact for SEO, which, as you know, Jeremy, is rare to do. You have to start with a company as they start. And that particular anecdote, not specifically highlighting this, is just relevant, is a company called Squarefoot. I believe they're called The Squarefoot. And it was a massive directory of real estate properties. So big fan, when we're talking SEO, of directories. Yeah. So was able to implement strategy there. And since then, they have quite taken off. So I certainly will not take all the credit for that, but was very excited to make an impact at the front lines.
So a lot of experience on this, on doing SEO and marketing for software and technology and those type of companies. What's the differentiator between what you see in SEO when it comes to, you know, like a car dealership in Queens, you know, like Major World, you know, there, what is the difference that you see as an entity when it comes to, hey, I am in the tech space? Is it the B2B nature thing, or is it because it's technology, you inherently have an online support model, you know, or an access point that you're wanting to establish? There's a lot more navigation. So what is the nature of the beast when it comes to SaaS and or tech companies that you're working with versus, you know, a physical location where you're trying to optimize?
Well, I'm happy to answer, but I certainly didn't mean to cannibalize B2C versus B2B with my earlier answer. It was just my particular anecdotes were of music and entertainment. But to answer your question, anything starts in SEO with keyword research. I realize for most of the audience, I'm stating the obvious, but I state that because it is so obvious and a simple first step answer. Without the keyword research to inform what matters for that particular product or client, much else is moot. You could optimize on the edges, but the whole point is to find the opportunity of the high rankability combined with good enough volume, qualified good enough volume. So to answer your question about a car dealership, I not too long ago mentioned my passion from an SEO perspective for directories. A car dealership is no different. It has a directory of a bunch of cars. The challenge is to understand exactly what terms, keywords, phrases are being used to describe either that car specifically or the concept of buying cars in that area, so regional. So to your point, Queens Cars for Sale, Queens Car Dealership, etc. I love that you mentioned Queens. I'm from Ridgewood, Queens, on the border of Bushwick, Brooklyn. So in that example, it wouldn't just be Queens. It might be Ridgewood, right? So neighborhood specific.
Yeah.
Adjacent neighborhoods could be zip code based. So there are different ways to spin local. And by the way, I was Ridgewood, New York, 11385. So that was my zip code.
All the way down to the specific zip code.
Exactly.
So I'm curious because I came from working with SEO SaaS tools like Raven Tools, TapClicks, and working in the ecosystem to build tools for SEOs to help them execute on keyword research. I made my own little SaaS called SEO Arcade, which uses a keyword cluster-based approach. And, you know, I've always felt that most tools kind of leave a lot on the table in terms of analysis because they stop just at generic search volume and they don't take it to the next levels, which is just because there's a volume of say 1,000 searches per month for educational tech, you know, for this particular term, it doesn't mean that you're going to get 1,000 clicks. Like the best you can do is what, 20, I think it's 25 or 26% ish is the best organic CTR that you can hope for. Sometimes a few digits higher. I know Advanced Web Ranking has a pretty good organic CTR study. That's what I map my tool to for informational type of queries. And you can play around with those, but I'm curious how you look at the other metrics of when you're doing keyword research, if you do so, you know, a likely conversion rate, a likely sale or close rate, And, you know, do you look at down that funnel of out those thousands, we could get 25% if at best, then our conversion rate is, you know, 5%, which means we get this many leads or this many trials or this many subscriptions or free tiers. And then we actually convert to payment this percentage of those leads, trials. And then sure. that represents this much revenue, either upfront or lifetime value. So is that consistent with your keyword research approach, or do you have a different spin on the usual, hey, let's go look at search volumes?
Sure. So there's two parts to that answer. I'll try to answer each comprehensively, but separate. So the first part is the actual research component. And the second one is the model component that you were just speaking to, Jeremy. So I'll stay away from the model for now and talk about the research first. Yep. So full disclosure, we are a SEMrush partner. So in terms of tools and tool usage and tool choice, both because we're partners, sure, but also because I believe in the tool, we're big SEMrush fanboys and girls in Team IXL. So if you're not familiar with the UI and the experience of SEMrush, I will try to speak slightly in abstracts to get to illustrate the point. Yeah. So clearly volume, as you mentioned, Jeremy, but volume has components to it. That number is the monthly average. So if the number is 1,000, then what they're saying is 12,000 searches have happened this year. That does not equate to 1,000 happened each month. So seasonality is big. Mm-hmm. And in many of the industries that I'm in, you might have a 75-25 split on a certain four-month period. Yeah. For example, I've got a summer camp client. So obviously, people aren't searching for summer camp in November, right?
Yes.
So similar mentality there. So seasonality is important. Let's move past that to say, what are the other metrics? I would argue things, the most important second metric is keyword difficulty, at least as it relates to our mindset as mm-hmm. IXL, which is, why are we even doing this? We're doing this so that you can rank on the very first page, ideally in the top three slots, and particularly ideally on the top slot. So yeah. keyword difficulty has a direct correlation to that solution. If your keyword difficulty from a scale of 0 to 100 is 75, in IXL's world, we exclude that from our strategy wholeheartedly. We are only playing in decent availability to rank, pretty good availability to rank, really good, excellent. We're only playing with can this rank equals yes. So that yeah. means keyword difficulty should be no more than 30. And honestly, if you really want to get to, just to be illustrative, if you build it, they will come, which is to say, yeah. if I just optimize this, will it be on the first page? If your keyword difficulty is 10 or less, and I'm not into making guarantees, I feel very comfortable telling my clients, if you just hover around this area, I can guarantee you, you will see success. We don't know what specific term amongst this matrix of terms will rank on the first, second, third, fifth, eighth slots. But I can put my reputation on the fact that if you focus on this methodology, you will get things on the first page. So keyword difficulty is the second, and I would argue, often more important than the volume, especially in the B2B space. That is the core metric that we care about. There may be a few others, but really it comes down to the game being a Venn diagram with those two metrics. And you had a second question about modeling. Yeah. So first off, I appreciate you highlighting the click-through rate metrics that are based on benchmarks. We also create spreadsheet models based on benchmarks. So we would have a literal spreadsheet of an expected CTR. The challenge is, of course, as I just noted, we can't guarantee just because we did a good job if it's going to be on the first, second, or fifth slot. Something ranking on the fifth slot is not a bad thing when it was once 26th. But that doesn't mean that it got to the first slot. And yeah. much of that is just believing in the law of averages. If anyone tells you differently, then I'd love to learn from that person, because I've been on the front lines enough to know that with few exceptions, you can't guarantee a performance of that type. Now, I will also add, because it's very relevant in 2025, AI and ChatGPT has literally significantly affected all of these metrics.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Mm-hmm. Because there is a preview ChatGPT answer to most questions if you've installed the plugin that even supersedes not only the first slot organically, but even the ads that were once above the first slot. The ChatGPT response even goes above that, which literally created a new first slot. And it has tremendously affected CTRs, even on these benchmarks. And in fact, it's become a referral source. ChatGPT is now a Google Analytics referral source, and a heavy one at that. So do you treat that as an organic result? Do you treat it as something else? I will say it's all gray area right now. And any answer that I could tell you is just my approach and not the absolute final answer.
I love that. You touched on a couple of things that I want to just circle back to. So the first is seasonality. You know, like if you're, you know, if you're an auto spa, if you're a drive-through, you know, Tidal Wave auto spa, like you're getting cars driving through, obviously you're not going to get as many cars driving through when everything's frozen. And then, like if you're running your car wash in New York, in Queens, then there's literally you. But at the same time, as soon as that's over, you're going to have your busy season because all of that salt on the roads is going to start corroding cars. So there's this trade-off. As soon as it's warm enough in spring to start washing, like have that regular car wash open again, then it's busy season. So in your marketing process or channel, what do you do to ensure from the front lines that you're understanding their seasonality? Like, what does that process look like?
Well, again, not a sponsored brand name drop, but I'll say again, Semrush has that level of detail in it. So you can actually see not only the volume numbers, but, and for those of you listening, I'm being illustrative with my finger, you can actually see a chart that shows spikes, peaks, valleys. And so it's on the job of the marketer to understand what that chart means and to interpret, so we are currently in a dip, or I see the spike coming up in the next couple of months. So the data's there. It's just a matter of knowing how to, I don't know, be a good SEO and understand it and know how to use it, right? So, yeah.
Yeah. The second, I want to talk about keyword difficulty as a score, as a value. Because it taps into a bigger conversation I've been having with another SEO, Michael McDougald, about what do we actually know about how Google is treating authority for domains? Is it still true to say that we understand perfectly that some domains are stronger than others when it comes to I get a backlink from this site versus this site? Because that's the foundation of, you know, of a rank score, you know, ranking difficulty score, saying, oh, hey, I looked at this keyword and based off of the number of links that they have and our internalized metriced scoring system, of how we evaluate the strength of that domain based off of those links. What is our evidence right now that Google actually really uses any of that? I mean, we have the old Google PageRank patent, you know, so we know that it's still in there somewhere. They haven't, you know, they haven't said they tossed it. We can guess at that. But what operationally are we really working off of to confirm this model? Is it simply anecdotes of like, oh, hey, yeah, like enough people said, I've gotten a really good link from like this really strong site and I got more rankings, because I can point to my client, like I just did a consult for a menswear and they bought comment spam links, nothing else on the page changed, but they bought 25 comment spam links from really crappy sites. And in theory, in the PageRank theory, that should have had little to no value at all. At best, you know, you should get flags in SEMrush about the toxicity of these, like, exactly so dangerous. Right. But it worked. The rankings went up, and they gained traffic. So, you know, that surfaced to my mind an argument of, like, because Michael McDougald had seen case after case of, like, he's going out and he's doing, you know, the white hat thing, trying to get the best quality link from sites. And he's looking at that, spending hours. We've done, like, multiple models to pull in, like, these value scores. And the top nine competitors are garbage. Their backlink profile is, you know, two-thirds garbage and the other is, like, day-old bread. You know, it's kind of good. Like, you could eat it to survive, but, like, he's bringing in, like, you know, artisanal bread of links and, like, spending all of this time. And now he's reaching the point of inflection of, like, how much do we really have been able to confirm that that model still exists? Sure. And to what extent should we hitch our marketing to that?
Well, just to react to the anecdote that you've shared, and with a little bit of, I guess, my and my company IXL's tactics intermittently sprinkled in there, we are the company has the tone that I would say, obviously, I as an individual contributor had taken for my whole career, which is I'm a bit OCD. I don't want anything negative in my periphery or in my client's periphery. So that means if there is a low domain score backlink, even if, with respect, Jeremy, the anecdote that you said that seems to have worked, my instincts would be, no matter that it works, to never entertain that arena of sketchiness. Now, why would I say that even though what you've just shared says, wait, but I've just learned that it works, so what do we do now? I just firmly believe that Google continues to update its algorithm, and just because it's working right now, they'll figure it out soon and you'll get docked or penalized. It's happened to some of the biggest, baddest websites not too long ago. And so I just rather, like, steer clear of sketchiness in that vein. You also touch on something that, as you said, I know it was a little tongue-in-cheek about the artisanal types of links. Look, I mean, you need high domain authority, and generally speaking, you get high domain authority by having, for lack of a better term, cosigns from other high domain authorities. So the question is, how do you get those links? Yes, 80% of that answer is the artisanal going out there trying to sell someone to give you a backlink approach. It's very difficult. It has a 1 out of 100 conversion rate, I'm well aware. And really, if you don't have the right content, you're sort of wasting your time and swimming upstream, because even if you have the right content, it's still challenging. Mm-hmm. What we like to do is focus first on the 20% that isn't that, which is to say, do follow links that aren't spammy, that we can actually control our own output. So for example, figuring out the X number of social media profile pages that are do follow. Like, for example, Pinterest is a do follow. So we often ask a client, even if, and this stays between you and me and the podcast listeners, even if they have no reason to care about Pinterest as a brand, I'm still telling them you need to build a Pinterest profile and put a backlink on it, right?
Yeah.
If you don't exist in all these directories that we've determined are do follow and not spammy, you need to build these profile directories profiles within the directory. And suddenly you have, just through hustle, 10, 15, 20 strong backlinks to start. So why wouldn't you start there? And then from there, sure, it becomes a little bit of PR, frankly, which is I'm trying to sell website X on my concept. Yeah. And to that end, that's probably like a whole episode itself, because it's one of the more challenging things to do in SEO. Anyone who crushes that, I utterly respect, because you could be as smart as you want and be as well researched as you want, and you're walking in expecting a 1% conversion rate, if that.
No, I definitely agree. And the direction I was going was not to validate, because I told him a similar message of like, okay, you've validated my statement that links equal rankings. Yeah. Now, what you've done, let's look at the source of these. And you've gotten a link from a site, an article, I think it was an Indian article about a blender, and that his was the link after the casino, then his menswear link. Now, I'll disclose the keyword that he wanted to rank for was banana hammock. So okay. Maybe it's in good company, because the next link was, you know, a Viagra link. So I was like, okay, like you told me when we were onboarding for this consult that you didn't want to be associated with, you know, adult content, and you were having difficulty with that sometimes on some of your underwear that you're selling. So let's not have co-occurring anchors for adult objects and items.
Right.
Let's go a different tack and find some other ways to get, you know, get links. And I love the concept of, I use this idea that there's a reflection of yourself as a person and of your business onto the digital world. And if you think of it as that Alice in Wonderland through the looking glass, what are you setting up? Because you can choose, you can set things up in the digital world a lot easier than you can in the real world. So sometimes the biggest impact is doing something in the real world that you can then reflect on the other side. Or other times it's looking for those opportunities where I have half of my face in the mirror isn't showing because I need to clean the glass or fill out those details. So that's finding the business profiles, the Wikipedia entries, checking on Wikipedia. Sometimes it's grabbing social profiles. Sometimes it's the next layer out is industry profiles. The next is your partner organizations that you work with, then your supply chain, and then your distant cousin who has a website and he just happens to have written about something and you ask him for a link. Like, if you fill out your reflection and take that time to do that, then you're in a much stronger position to do the harder things of finding other ways to gain digital visibility and get those backlinks. But I find the hardest ones are usually trying to get the organization to do something in the real world that's going to be something that you can then market on the other side.
Sure. No, I appreciate that thought process, because I'm a big fan of physical meets digital, shaking hands and kissing babies, as I like to say. Like, it's very important to get out there. So to the point of how do you make something like that SEO friendly? First off, perhaps knowing the exact keywords up front before you do anything physical to then strategically choose the project or effort based on those words. And what I mean is, for example, I'll start with the simplest one, which is still kind of digital, but webinars, right? So if you're choosing your webinar topics based on certain highly rankable keywords, then you are both creating something current and new and non-salesy while also giving yourself countless opportunities to rank on the first page. Going one level deeper to physical events, press releases, when using the correct websites, are do follow, and therefore worthy of strategizing. I've done this real event, and I'm simply going to title the press release with these keywords in mind, right? So that's something that I'm a big fan of as well. And that same event can become a blog post on your site. So you get a double effect there. You're launching the press release and you also have the blog post there. So yeah, again, no matter how complex details of SEO can become, it really starts with the keyword research. You need to know where you're aiming the efforts. And if you don't have that precise awareness, then you're kind of wasting your time, with the utmost of respect. So yeah.
No, I'm right there on that page, like in terms of like press releases and targeting you know, doing events like I did a trash cleanup here in Cookeville for a local driveway company. And, you know, I think there's SEOs would do well to discover where hidden ecosystems are that multiply your effort. So many SEOs might not be aware that sites like Eventbrite syndicate not just to other event aggregators, but they're tied in and they have data partnerships with local news. They have partnerships with local radio stations that have a section that talks about events coming up on the weekend. And so you do something and it can show up and multiply your visibility there. You know, it's the same as taking your video and posting it not just to YouTube, but Vimeo, because that in certain categories, that'll get syndicated out to multiple categories and multiple different sites. So there's definitely that value proposition of doing the real world thing, but with the digital world in mind as your target. But it's also like, incidental. Like I went and picked up trash for a couple hours with my kids. And the one guy that showed up, it was like, oh, hey, you posted to Reddit and I wanted to come out and help you. He ended up needing some driveway work. So you can fold back that value. Like, you know, if you look at these different channels, well, you know, I was able to post to Reddit and Facebook groups. And then I asked AI on Gemini, on Copilot, about what events were coming up after I had done that work before. And after I had done that work before, there was no visibility for a cleanup by Jay's Driveways. And a week after, you know, and a week before the event, oh, hey, there is a cleanup. You know, associated with Adopt-A-Spot by Jay's Driveways. And so that's an entry in AI search. Those are entries on social media platforms. I know that over 10,000 people saw that subreddit post and, you know, got, I think, 25 upvotes in that subreddit. So, like, doing things that have a real-world positive impact are really good. One of my nonprofit interviewees, Andrew Choi, of Do Good Points, talked about a neglected piece of the nonprofit side is that for-profits forget they exist and that nonprofits are often heavily connected to the communities that they want to reach. And so, like, there's so many opportunities to do good and do good marketing at the same time.
Sure. I think I'll follow up on the last point, but I have something from prior to share as well. So on the last point, anything can be done for visibility if you focus on the keyword difficulty score. So in the example of, let's say, a nonprofit into the analogy of Queens, and you know as that nonprofit that you have the very access that you've just described, Jeremy, but you're wondering if other types of companies even know you exist, to even know to ask you for that access or for a partnership, etc. So imagine you were able to say Queens Community Partnerships or Queens Community Partnerships from Nonprofits or whatever the long tail keyword might be.
Yeah.
And if you're thinking in that way, then even if volume is low, 10 searches a month, 20 searches a month, those 10 or 20 people are, in theory, so high quality for your efforts that you can actually still rank on the first page for a lot of that stuff. So I've seen people do that for countless approaches, not just nonprofit, but even reputation management, just making sure that you on the peripheries have medium to long tail keywords that you're accounting for. So that you want to find them where they're at and meet their search term when it is a 5 or 10 keyword difficulty such that you can rank right there on the query. And I also wanted to mention from prior, though much of this conversation we've talked about a few anecdotes and details, and I'm having a lot of fun, by the way, just nerding out to SEO with you, Jeremy. I would say if someone was to find value in listening to this conversation, I would like to hyper summarize by saying there's things you control and things you don't control as an SEO.
Yeah.
So my recommendation is to fully understand every last aspect of what you control. I've mentioned many of them on this call already. The keyword research, the choice of words, the updating of your own CMS, title, description, H1, etc. slug. Self-made backlinks through profiles, through directories, etc. And then compartmentalize all of that as one bucket, the things you control. And from a ratio of 0 to 100, how much of this is all of SEO, it's probably about 33% at best 50%. Rather than seeing that as glass half empty, just crush it. Just dominate what you control. Make sure that every last title description, H1, make sure every last link you can build, every last profile, every last directory thing is tight to the nines, rather than saying, and rather than feeling glass half empty about that.
Yeah.
Once you have done that, then yes, it is true that 50 to 66% of the rest is to generate backlinks that you don't control.
Yeah.
And to that end, generally speaking, it has to do with the content itself. If I don't know the person from Adam or Eve, which is probably 95% of the people who would be receiving my outreach. But then there's also, to your point, Jeremy, about the rings, sort of the target and the rings. Mm-hmm. So someone who specifically has written about this topic before, an academic institution that is studying this topic, your alumni network, you know, anything that is relevant enough where they still need to do you a favor, but there's an opportunity here. It's really glorified PR. I don't mean to be too loaded there, but like it's glorified PR. And honestly, PR reps who don't perhaps pridefully wear the SEO cap, sometimes they should because they get a ton of backlinks that lead to SEO improvements.
Yeah, they certainly can. There's this weird like tribalism or like differentiation, you know, and it's there's going to be a clash. There's going to be a crossover. I plan to talk to a couple of different PR people on this show to get their perspective and to understand how they look and treat SEO as part of the enemy, as part of the process, as internal enemies. Is it just, you know, two brothers that happen to have like a same, like similar area where they overlap and so they fight? Oh, it's mine. No, it's because I did this. you know, there are, you know, because I think SEOs have kind of prided themselves on some of these of saying, oh, well, you know, in SEO, we can look at the data and we were able to attribute that this came from here and it falls into this bucket. And we did that. Well, as Rand Fishkin is fond of pointing out, we are entering or have entered a post-attribution world with multiple platforms, dark social media, multi-touch, you know, so the post-attribution model concept of who did what where gets so complicated. Maybe they saw a PR mention and then saw a TikTok, then Googled it, came to a page, left the page, came back, remembered, Googled a different term, came back to a subdomain, and then bought the thing. Who do you attribute that win to? And if you're like squabbling over pennies, then that's important to you. But if you're looking at it from, okay, well, in the AI powered arena of what's coming, GPT, you know, Perplexity is connected to Bing's database. We just found out that Brave and its index is behind Claude. And so there are these different indices of search, and the way that LLMs process and surface information is at current far more similar to PR than it is a reliance on links that we came to understand and have to fight and squabble over links. There's in AI search, there's almost as much, and you know, there's still question, but of the value of links when it comes to LLMs does RAG process it? Do they
sure.
do they have a secondary system that applies? Probably, possibly, and will they definitely need it? Absolutely. But at their current incarnation, it's pretty much they're responding to PR.
So to that end, I think that rather than I understand your point of say understanding who gets the best attribution based on those efforts. My approach has always been to just accept what we control and can dominate and make modeling and promising to that effect.
Yeah.
And also, I don't want to say caveat or make excuses, but make it very clear, again, that 50 to 66% called backlinks accrued through PR-like approaches and set expectations accordingly with clients that we are focusing heavily on the former and a little bit on the latter, and in fact, embracing the partnership rather than the potential conflict of credit, and embracing the strength of PR, because PR, the backlinks today, in my opinion, the ones that you don't control, are based almost overwhelmingly on relationships. The mm-hmm. only exception is if you have an absolute killer piece of content where, like, it's undeniable. Who wouldn't want to link this? The 2025 Ultimate Guide to SEO, for example. Right. So if you don't have either of those elements to your SEO backlink building strategy, a reputable PR person with relationships who's aligned with your goals and your content, the latter, then I would say you're probably going to have to set proper expectations with your clients. If I don't have the content and if I don't have an awesome PR rep, I only have but so many relationships.
Right.
Separately, I also want to highlight some part of SEO that we haven't today, Jeremy, really discussed, which really fills the cup of a true SEO, which is the technical components.
Yeah.
So I excel... and, you know, not bragging here, there's plenty of awesome qualified SEO agencies out there. But, you know, we pride ourselves on being able to navigate through the technical SEO quite well, crawl budgets, understanding, you know, if your sitemap is structured correctly, you know, that type of stuff. And ensuring that we continue to get as many pages crawled as possible while we continuously see errors fix, right? Sometimes there's a weird stigma against the concept of maintaining SEO health, right? SEMrush, for example, has a health score and it shows you the errors, etc. Sometimes people like to make jokes tongue-in-cheek to say, oh, you're just doing the management stuff, cleaning a few errors. That stuff matters. And if you don't have your eye on it, then it can have an incremental effect. Sound back end of your website rises the tide. Messy back end of your website lowers the tide. It's obvious. My statement there is obvious to SEOs and sometimes too intangible for a client who doesn't know. It's like, what do you mean? There is an aggregate positive or negative, death by 1,000 cuts, or in the opposite, winning by 1,000, I don't know, the opposite of cuts, winning by 1,000 micro wins.
Baby steps.
Yeah, baby steps. There you go. So it matters. All of this matters. And we, just to my earlier point about work, I'm kind of OCD with the stuff. I want my errors to be clean. I want to know all of the sites that we can set up, we have set up. I want to know that every title description H1 is tight as it can be. And then whatever shall be based on the math, right? So that's how we think about it.
Absolutely. I totally agree. There's a lot of value on the technical SEO side. Like if you're, you know, I talked with another guest, Joshua Ramsey, about how if you're struggling with indexation, you might look at how long it's taking for your page to load. That could be a huge factor, you know, because Google's not going to, you know, especially on a mobile first, you know, not even like you know, I'm loading a page and it's fine. Well, you did that on desktop. On mobile, that image is huge and it's not in WebP. Like, there's all these technical things and you got to check them off. I've loved this conversation. As we wrap up, as a final question of what we haven't talked about, give me one quick tip for an SEO to go back to their desk, close this window. What should they do today?
So I'm going to answer that question with a slight curveball, Jeremy. I hope that's okay. Yep. I've given a lot of tips here and I stand by every one of them. My answer is not going to be a tip. It's going to be a challenge for all of us, myself included. The newest thing that everyone needs to care about is how to get your content into the ChatGPT response. What is now the first click, right? The first slot. That is something that is still a bit of a wild, wild west, in my humble opinion. There are some people who are claiming that there's a best practice approach. I'm sure you can Google a few articles. I humbly share that. It's so nascent. Sure, please follow whatever articles and tactics you believe are sound and experiment. But there is no master solution to this right now. So I encourage all of you to really understand the ecosystem has changed significantly because of this one change. What we've all worked so hard to get something on the fourth slot, third slot, second slot, first slot. Well, now the first slot is the seventh slot. Yeah. You have to scroll twice on your on your mouse to get to the first organic slot. That's crazy. So that's the challenge for all of us. And not if, but when I and my team solve our version of that problem, I'm happy to share those tactics anywhere you can find me.
Fantastic. I know you hang out on LinkedIn, so I'll hook up over there. I'll add your site to the show notes. Is there any special resource or anything that you want to shout out, any content piece that you guys have put out recently that you think listeners should check out that represents IXL?
Well, if it's specific to IXL, I would just say please check us out on our website, ixl.co, not .com. We have a lot of experience with many different verticals, including some detailed case studies on performance, several of them related to SEO. So I would just encourage anyone who's curious about what it is that I and we do to check us out on our site. And other than that, as Jeremy indicated, I've committed in my head and my heart to LinkedIn for 20 years, even before my tech startup career. So, I would just say find me there and find our company, IXL. Give us a follow. And we appreciate any support and we're all about giving it back as well.
Thanks so much, Chris. See you later.
My pleasure.